This time on Weather Brains, we take a look at changes in the relationship between broadcast meteorologists and the National Weather Service.
Now I think we're closer together. We're exchanging information.
We talk about the technology helping to make that happen.
I think instant messaging has been a boon to allowing the television meteorologists and the Weather Service meteorologists to understand what they're each doing.
We also look at fundamental changes coming to the broadcasting profession.
Our old business model is dying. Times are changing. Times are changing like a meteor streaking through the night in this business.
Plus, Bill Murray's childhood weather project that turned into a business success story.
They sent me back a contract for 15 years to do that darn thing.
So. Yow! J.B. Elliott on thunder showers and thunderstorms. And some advice. If you want to become involved in severe storm spotting, listen to James Spann.
I'm a firm believer that you've got to have your ham radio license.
That's all coming up. Welcome to Weather Brains, the podcast that's all about weather, produced by the Weather Geeks of the Weather Company from Birmingham, Alabama. I'm David Black, and with me for this podcast is James Spann, Chief Meteorologist of ABC 3340 Birmingham. Hello, James. What have you to report, sir?
I'm just staring at the storms of spring on the radar here tonight.
And we have a few to deal with, it sounds like.
Yeah, pretty interesting. Had a big old supercell storm roll through northeast Louisiana and Mississippi. Looks like that's about to merge with the storms coming north on this warm front here. So we've got some active weather down south, and it looks like we'll probably have an active two-day stretch up here. But hey, this is May in the deep south. What do you expect, you know?
All right, we'll follow that. Hello as well to Mr. Brian Peters. Hello, Brian.
Good evening, David and James and Bill. And James, I was just thinking, isn't it interesting that the severe weather today looks a lot like we'd expect the severe weather to be in February, except it's May. And back in March, the severe weather was up in central United States, the Ohio Valley, which look a lot like severe weather in June or July.
So somebody's not watching the calendar.
I would say that the weather is just plain messed up.
And I think we got to get some kind of update on Brian on this gambling junket he went on last week. See, he can defend himself, but he was conspicuously absent from this program. And rumor had it he was at some casino somewhere in
Rumor. That's a complete, utter fact.
He wasn't a gambling junket. Wow. Okay.
No.
How much money did you lose?
$80.
Ooh. Nothing for a man of your stature.
About to say, man, he makes that in 1 second.
Hello to Bill Murray as well, too.
Take it away, Bill. Get me out of this, will you?
Yeah, I'll rescue you now. I'll rescue you for sure, Brian. Yeah, it's good to be back with everybody tonight. I hope my internet will work really, really well. So we're out in some internet hole out here in Trussville, I'm afraid.
We've got just kind of a free-form program for you this time, but I thought I would just kick things off by talking about an event that happened here in Birmingham over the weekend that has a connection to several of us in the Weather Company group, and that is the Birmingham Amateur Radio Club held its annual ham radio convention called HamFest, and we dropped out there. And James, I don't know if you had a chance to go out there. Brian was out there. Were you out there, James?
You know, I'm kind of like Bill Murray. I have another life in which I have another responsibility involving health care, of all things. And I had a function I had to attend on Saturday all day, and I could not make the HamFest this year. So I am anxious to hear the report from you guys.
You were missed, James. Several people came up to me and said, well, where's your buddy? I said, which buddy? They said, well, James, of course.
I need to buy a new radio. I have had budget for a new handheld for 2 years, and this money's burning a hole in my pocket. So I'm probably just going to have to go
giving
to
Huntsville. Giving it to me, I saw the perfect radio for you.
Oh, really?
Yeah, the Kenwood that does VHF, UHF, and 220.
Yeah.
And it was only $314, so I think it even fits in your budget.
It will fit right in my budget.
That's,
I guess, I'll make
cool.
The Huntsville Ham Fest in August then.
There was a new group there, David, Memphis Amateur Radio.
Didn't know about them.
They were there, and it's kind of funny because I used to do business with them when I worked for the Weather Service in Memphis.
Oh, so they're spreading out a little bit.
Is this a dealer?
Yes, it was a dealer.
Okay. Great.
One thing I thought was kind of interesting, too, is we had several people come up to me and mention that they enjoy listening to Weather Brains. They said some very nice things about the podcast, guys, and I just thought we would let them know how much we appreciate them for listening. We're grateful for that.
We probably ought to plug amateur radio anyway here. I've been a licensed ham radio operator since the age of 14, and that directly got me involved in weather. And that's the reason I'm here today. So it's had a lot to do with my life. It's been a great lifelong hobby. And to this day, you know, the friends you make, and it's just a wonderful hobby. And you don't have to know Morse code anymore. The exams are relatively simple. They're given locally all the time. And I know they had multiple exam sessions out there at the HamFest this weekend. And yep. If you have any interest in becoming a volunteer weather spotter, I'm a firm believer that you've got to have your ham radio license. You know, charging out in the field with a cell phone. And cell phones are great. I sure have one, but during a tornado emergency, sometimes they don't work as well as they would otherwise. And in order to have orderly reports back to the Weather Service, you really need to be on the amateur radio network. So you need to get your ham license. So there.
The other thing, too, is even though it's a cellular technology world these days, when amateur radio operators go to the National Weather Service, as they frequently do to help with storm spotting and communications, even if everybody out there had a cell phone, which a lot of folks obviously do, that system still doesn't work because you can't take umpteen phone calls simultaneously. The beauty of amateur radio is that they do have the capability to talk interactively between a large number of people in real time without having to hang up and dial and redial and all of that. So even today, with all of the digital this and digital that and handheld this and that, amateur radio is still a real big part of what's going on in severe weather detection.
My involvement in amateur radio began just exactly the opposite of James's. James kind of got interested in amateur radio and then got interested in weather. I was interested in weather and was a meteorologist, went to Fort Worth and saw the really well-organized amateur radio storm spotters that they had out there. That piqued my interest, and I got my ham license back in 1975, so gosh.
I think we heard you bought your license, you bootlegged it or something, is that right?
That's not true.
Okay.
This was in the age, in the days where you actually had volunteer examiners who came to your house and delivered the Morse code test to you personally.
Wow.
Yeah, I know, that really dates me pretty well, doesn't it?
Well, there was a time, James, you know more about this, maybe when hams had to go where, to Atlanta to take their ham radio test?
Yeah, in order to, now the novice exam, that was the entry level exam, I took that at another amateur radio's home. That worked that way back then, but this was in 1970, long time ago. But back then, to get all of the other licenses, the general, the advanced, the extra, you had to go before an FCC examiner. And for me, my home's Tuscaloosa, I would have to go to Birmingham, and they would come to Birmingham twice a year. And otherwise, you have to go to Atlanta. And being a kid, I didn't have much transportation, so I wound up going before an FCC examiner to get the general, the advanced, and the extra class, and I took them one per year. So pretty interesting. But times have changed. It is so much easier now.
And I guess if folks in the Birmingham area, throughout central Alabama, for that matter, would like to hear what goes on, if you have a programmable scanner, you can listen in on amateur radio communications, one of the primary frequencies that is in use when severe weather develops around here is 146.880 megahertz, and that's the amateur radio repeater, which is a communication system used by the Birmingham Amateur Radio Club. And James, I think over the years we've heard a lot of severe weather communications and storm spotting going on that frequency.
Oh, you hear history on these amateur radio repeaters. If you really like weather, you need to get a frequency list for your market, your community, and plug those into your scanner and just take a listen. It's absolutely fascinating to listen to the nets when they're formally activated with the guy at the Weather Service, and then you got people out there in the field. So, yeah, it's a wonderful hobby. And if you want to learn more about it, the national organization is called the American Radio Relay League, and their website is ARRL.org. If you go to that, you can learn a whole lot more about it. It's pretty cool stuff.
Somebody else who got into amateur radio not too long ago is Bill Murray. Bill, what got you interested in ham radio?
Well, you know, when I was beginning to kind of prepare to be a storm chaser, David, it was evident to me that was one thing that you really needed to do, because in the chasing process, a big part of what you're doing is, you know, actually relaying information to the National Weather Service. So, you know, through all the training and everything I did, it was evident that was something that you just had to do. So they have those great online tests, and I tell you what, those really helped me prepare I got the book and studied it and aced the test when I took it up in Coleman, and some of the nicest folks you'll ever meet, and didn't have any trouble with the test, just a little bit of preparation, about a month of reading the book and taking the online tests, and I was real proud the day I got my KI4EBK is my call sign on amateur. I was very thrilled to get that.
And somebody who's so excited about amateur radio is Brian, because I'm still hearing him breathing. You hear that heavy breathing, James?
We still think he reads dirty magazines during our programs or something.
That's not true.
Okay.
I just had to gamble in Philadelphia because, I was a casino virgin until I went there.
I'm not going there.
Good.
Yeah. This show could go downhill in a hurry.
It does.
I want to put
anyway.
In a plug for Alabama Emergency Response Team, ALERT. They're the group of volunteers that go to the National Weather Service. As a matter of fact, their meeting is, we're recording this on a Monday night, their meeting is tomorrow, Tuesday night, at 7 p.m., and it's a special meeting because they're actually going to meet at the National Weather Service in Shelby County at the Shelby County Airport. They're going to meet there for a little familiarization and training on the equipment and have a little tour of the office, so that will be good for those folks who want to come to the National Weather Service. So I would encourage anybody, if you're interested at all, try to attend that meeting. Even if you don't have your ham license, you can get a real good idea of what it's like and what's involved. And it is interesting to be there as an amateur radio operator because you really are on the pulse beat. I remember during the April 8th, 1998 F5 tornado that we had in Jefferson County, that the amateur radio storm spotters and the Sheriff's Department in Jefferson County, they, for all intents and purposes, tied for the first report of that tornado. So that was kind of an interesting thing. Reports came in from both a telephone call from the Sheriff's Department and from amateur radio simultaneously. So that was kind of interesting, that was what was happening. And keep in mind, too, that you mentioned cell phones and telephone lines. So the National Weather Service in Birmingham, as most offices do, they only have one 800 number for storm reports. So as a result, you can only have one person talking at a time on that line. So being able to talk to lots of amateur radio operators who are out there is fantastic, and that's the way things should work and need to work and do work, thanks to all the hundreds of hours of volunteer efforts that the amateur radio people put into it.
I thought I'd mention a couple of other things right quick about ham radio these days. Amateur radio, of course, dates back many decades now, but they're really taking full advantage of all the latest technology. They have some pretty cool communications systems that are based on VoIP on the internet. So if you're into that kind of technology, ham radio sort of dovetails nicely into that. And one other website I thought I'd throw out for folks listening to our podcast is that of the local amateur radio club, Birmingham Amateur Radio Club. There are a number of other groups, clubs around. The BARC, as it's called, I believe is probably the largest, and their website is w4cue.com. So if you want to find out about things going on in local amateur radio activities, go to that website. Got some email I thought I'd throw our way, too, that came from Wayne in Trafford, and this goes back to a podcast where we talked about news media and working with the National Weather Service. He asks primarily about the decision in February by the National Weather Service not to hold a statewide tornado drill. Quoting Wayne, "As long as I can remember, the media, weather departments, have always been a part of that. Although I do have a NOAA weather radio, I just can't understand why they would not let the media involved. By the way, I asked, and they never gave me a clear answer, just referred me to their webpage. I think one of the main lines of communications is both NOAA radio and the media. I will always believe that. Reason I ask is, I know people with disabilities, both hearing impaired and blind. They are my concern, and as a person who has a disability myself, I would want the media to do the state tornado drill also. What are your thoughts on this?" End quote. That's from Wayne. I did try to make a call to the National Weather Service in Birmingham to talk with them, but missed them today, so we'll maybe talk to them in the future. Any thoughts, guys?
But Brian is our Weather Service expert here, so I think he can answer that.
No, I can't answer that question, as a matter of fact. I was appalled myself when I found out. I've heard several different things about that. I know that before I retired from the Weather Service, there was a push by internal Weather Service folks to stop doing actual drills, actual issuance of a tornado warning. And I'm not sure, you know, I fought that tooth and nail while I was in the Weather Service, and the last severe weather awareness week I did, we had our drill. But I understand, too, that the week may have conflicted with some things that were going on, such as testing. That's the big thing I heard, and that they didn't want to have to interrupt school because of the testing that was underway. I understand that, but I don't really understand, you know, I mean, the week has been set for a long time. It's the states of Alabama, Georgia, South Carolina, Florida got together years ago and decided it would always be the last full week of February. I just don't see why, you know, they couldn't put the testing off a day or something like that. But I mean,
was Birmingham the only office not to do a statewide drill, or did the other offices not have one?
I'm not certain, James. I'm not certain.
You know, I know a lot of schools obviously always participate in that. I wonder sometimes, though, about how many adults, how many businesses take those drills seriously?
Well, you never can know the answer to that question completely. I do know from past experience that a number of them did, because I would get feedback afterward about, well, it was a really good chance to exercise our plan and our drill for our particular facility. Of course, after the March 27th, 94 Piedmont tornado, the Palm Sunday tornado of 94, a number of churches, of course, began to think about plans for their facilities. You know, they're not always in operation, you know, Monday through Friday, but they are on a Sunday. And as we found out on March 27th, tornadoes can occur on a Sunday and can strike churches. And that really prompted a lot of churches to get plans going. So I don't have a complete answer for you. And I thought about calling the Weather Service myself today because that question has come up from more than one source about why there was no drill this year.
I'm curious about the relationships in general these days, too, between the National Weather Service and the news media. It sure has changed, and really in many, many ways for the better. The technology today really allows the news media and the Weather Service to work more closely together. James, do you ever imagine years ago that there would be this type of internet-based, real-time communications with the very people who are watching the radar and issuing the warnings?
Yeah, I think that the instant message conferences we have with the National Weather Service have just really done a lot of things. It's brought us together, and that's something where I think for years it was an us against them kind of attitude. You know, we really didn't know them, and they didn't know us, and you know, they were down there at some office at the airport, and we were at the TV station. But now I think we're closer together. We're exchanging information. I think it's good for all of us that that's happening. In fact, I had lunch today with a couple of MICs, one from Birmingham, one from Huntsville, just to sit and talk. And again, the goal is to try and improve the relationship. And one of the things that they both told me that's just amazing, in some markets, there are television stations that will not get involved with this instant message program, which that blows my mind. And these are big markets that in which you have, you know, severe weather problems.
Do you know why they won't?
Well, the TV guys say, well, we just don't have time to fool with it. We don't have the staff to watch an instant message screen. And that's just insanity. I mean, that's I'm not going to say which market because I'll probably make somebody mad, but it was just astounding how some television stations, and the Weather Service tried to instigate it and you know, develop the IM chat session with TV stations, and all the TV guys just had no interest in it. So that was very disturbing. I think once you try this, you'll find that it's extremely beneficial and really worth your time. So I'm hoping that somebody might hear this and change their mind, because I know that many television people do listen to this program.
I think instant messaging has been a boon to allowing the television meteorologists and the Weather Service meteorologists to understand what they're each doing, because I've always believed this, and I believe it today, and I probably will believe it for as long as I live, that the Weather Service can't do it alone. It's got to be a partnership working together to be able to benefit the American people, whether it's in Alabama, Georgia, or Montana, or wherever, it doesn't matter. And I really believe that. I know it sounds, you know, motherhood and apple pie kind of thing, but it really is true. We've seen over time and time again that people don't hear the warnings just from weather radio. I think the number is, you know, something around 7% of the population has weather radios. You know, we're not always next to an outdoor siren. Sirens don't work in rural areas. And the bottom line is, if we're going to really keep the death toll from tornadoes down or from any weather event, we've got to work together. And I think it's great. And I was on the Weather Service side, and I'll have to admit, when it first started, I was a little skeptical about it all, too, from the point of view of manpower utilization during severe weather events. But after we started using it just a little bit, it became pretty obvious that it was something we needed to have and could work on to improve the communications between the two groups primarily.
And I've got to pat a couple of guys on the back, David, a guy named Tom Bradshaw and a guy named Ron Murphy. They were both here in Birmingham. They have both since moved on to other offices, but they came to us. It wasn't our idea. It was their idea. In fact, I remember we met at a local restaurant here just down the road, and it was Olshu and myself and those two guys, and that lunch conversation got the whole thing started, and it was just a tremendous idea, and I appreciate those guys taking the taking a chance. I mean, times are changing. Times are changing like a meteor streaking through the night in this business. And it's just been a great thing that we're using now between the media and the Weather Service here.
I think they used to maybe perceive themselves, the two sides, as being in totally different worlds with very little connection or interaction with each other. And that really seems to have changed now, in part because of what you guys are talking about. And I think probably the folks that are depending on these warnings to have their lives saved, they're going to be the ones to benefit. James, you talked about the times changing in broadcast meteorology. What are the biggest challenges that you see right now, and what is your thinking to accommodate the change?
Well, David, our old business model is dying, and everything changes. You know, when I was a kid, I played rock and roll music on AM radio, Top 40. You know, that died soon after I got out of that. And the existing television model is dying. Now, there will always be a need for broadcast meteorology, but we've got to get the economic model down in a new digital world. And so what that means for everybody in this business, I mean young, old, everybody, I don't care who you are, we're having to get all of our products now out digitally in a 24/7 world. When I was doing this for a long time, all I worried about was doing the weather on television in the evening at 5, 6, and 10 o'clock, going on TV for, 3 minutes at a time, where now I'm on 24/7 with the Internet. We're talking blogs and podcasts and webcasts and all these videos we're doing and this podcast here, 30-minute weekly show. The biggest struggle I think we all have is time management. How in the world do we get this done? And I'm blessed to have four people on the staff at the television station, plus the contract guys, you, David, and Bill Murray and JB, that work with us. But even that whole group, we're barely getting it done. So that's our biggest challenge. And what I'm challenging the young people is to wake up and understand you've got to get weather out there on the Internet. It's got to be fresh, constantly updated, not only in text form, but audio, video, and all that stuff. And it is a real challenge. The biggest issue I've got is time management and fatigue right now.
It's pretty obvious to me, too, that when major severe weather events happen around here, you guys get so much traffic on the Internet. You've had occasions in the past where your blog couldn't keep up with everybody trying to view it.
Yeah, we've got to, scalability is a whole other issue. We've got to be able to handle 100,000 users at once. And right now, we're not equipped to handle that on that blog. It's pulling, data off a database, and we're going to work on getting a solution for that. But I threw a bunch of terms up on the board at Mississippi State at the Severe Weather Conference, the Severe Storms Conference this year, a few months ago. And I told those kids, the young people in the audience, if you don't understand what all this stuff is, you won't make it. And some of the stuff I put up there, like RSS and Ajax and all these kind of things. And so it is a constant learning process, and it's a constant battle to try and stay ahead of the curve, David. I'm putting out these video updates. We're doing video map discussion updates. We're doing regular webcasts from the green chroma key wall. We're doing audio podcasts, the blog posts. And on top of that, I'm doing 27 radio stations, and it's enough to make your head spin. So hopefully we'll get a grasp on how to do weather in a 24/7 world, but it's just a challenge. And I'm thankful for, guys like Bill Murray. They step up and do all the work on Saturday and Sunday, which gives you a chance to breathe and be with your family for a couple of days.
You're talking about Bill Murray in particular. He's somebody who knows that Ajax technology because he's in the hotel business, so they've got to keep those rooms clean. Right, Bill?
Yeah, that Ajax, that comet, it comes in handy. That's that leading-edge technology.
And, Bill, you have yet another hat that you wear. Tell me about a fascinating website called weathercalendars.com.
Well, you know, it's a funny story, David, because I've been collecting weather facts and since I was a kid, and a lot of them just on notebook paper. You know, when JB was on the weather radio, he had an amazing knack for making that interesting. So, you know, frequently he would have, you know, stories about Alabama weather history when, you know, when the weather was fine and there was nothing really to talk about. So I would tape record those things, and I wish I had all those tapes today because they'd be priceless. But I would transcribe all those facts and data and go to the library. And eventually I looked up and I had a pretty fair collection of facts. And about 1996, I set out to, you know, type all that into a big document. Well, that document now is over 1,000 pages long. It's got about 6,000 weather anecdotes in it from all over the world, mostly the United States.
But you got it backed up on a floppy?
Oh yeah, it's backed up. It's backed up in a bunch of places because it's a lot of work. I imagine there's thousands of hours of work in that thing. And I sat down in the spring of 2002 and did a little calendar and sent it off to a company called Accord. They're famous for the big, you know, the weather guide calendar that comes out every year. It's real pretty with lots of pictures. It used to be the Weather Channel calendar. Those guys wrote me back. I sent them a submission, an entire, you know, calendar that I'd done. And they sent me back a contract for 15 years to do that darn thing.
So, yow!
Wow. The cool thing about it is I can buy the calendars for, you know, less than I could have them rented myself. And so it gives me a chance to sell them. And so, yeah, that weathercalendars.com site, you know, continues to grow, and they sell more calendars every year. It's been a lot of fun.
And I've seen those calendars, and they are really pretty. They're like desktop books to have in your living room. I'm really impressed with the job you do, Bill.
Well, thank you, David. If you like weather at all, you know, each day has a fact, an event that happened, and then each week also highlights a story. And I tell you, it's just a thrill to get to write it. I sit down about June and start working on it because it's due. Now it'll be due for 2008 in September, and you know, the one for 2007 is already in the can. And it's a joy to write, and it's a joy to collect those facts. And I really like that. I get to share a lot of that with our audience on the blog and on the webpage that we do for the television station every week, and get a lot of nice comments about that.
Those are fascinating. So you've got a 15-year contract?
That's what they tell me. I still can't believe it. I figured one day I'll send it off and I'll get a thing back saying that they moved or something. Didn't tell me. But
okay, folks, if you'd like to get a loan from Bill Murray, here's his email address, through weatherbrains.com. I'm just kidding. But that's wonderful. That really is.
His calendar is great if you just love interesting weather trivia, if I might say, or just interesting facts about the weather.
It's kind of sad because, you know, you think of it as a calendar, but it's really more like a book. A lot of people sit down and read it in a sitting and then just kind of refer to it through the years.
I think J.B. Elliott just joined us.
Hello, J.B.
I just got home. Hello there.
We've been talking about you for the whole podcast, so now I guess we better stop.
We understand you were seen in the local grocery store getting a bunch of donuts. Is that true?
Negative.
Just an imposter?
No, he was buying Pop-Tarts, cookies, and Buffalo Rock.
I got some Buffalo Rock. Boy, that's good.
So, J.B., how you been?
Doing pretty good. I twisted my neck 2 or 3 days ago, and I can only turn my head 2 inches to the right and 2 inches to the left. So I'm using a lot of ointment to try to thaw it out.
David was saying that you were going to start a new controversy over thunderstorms, thunder showers.
Well, a friend of mine asked recently what happened to the word thunder shower. You rarely hear it anymore. And it used to be standard terminology in a weather forecast, and it generally implied that the thunderstorms at that time were relatively mild and not really too much lightning and too much thunder or too much wind or anything. And thunderstorm always implied that it was a stronger storm. But I guess the reason the Weather Service pretty much did away with using thunder shower is that almost any thunder shower that develops can just in a few minutes become a thunderstorm. So who knows?
So that terminology is no longer officially used?
I haven't seen it used in a long, long time, in at least 10 years. Another term that I miss is cold wave warning. That would just send shivers down your spine when you had a cold wave warning issued, but that went out the window years ago.
The times, they're a-changing.
How about the dedication back in March of a hurricane-resistant office for the National Weather Service, out of all places, and the place that probably needs it is one of the most needful locations, Key West, Florida.
Wow. What's the building like?
I don't know. Haven't been there, but I just saw a little release about it and posted it on our blog, and there's a reference to a Southern Region newsletter or news item about it, which I did not read the whole thing. They had a picture of the dedication down there. Of course, Key West, of course, is quite vulnerable from storms. And I understand from their release that the interior part has been built to withstand winds of 250 miles an hour. The outer part only built to withstand winds of 165. Not sure I understand the rationale to that. But I mean, I guess cost probably entered in there. Easier and less costly to build a smaller section that can withstand more force and therefore protect the employees. And of course, we know from Katrina last year that most, if not all, of the employees at the New Orleans National Weather Service office, which is actually located in Slidell, most of them suffered either complete losses. I understand something along 50% of the employees completely lost their homes, and the other 50% had at least damage all the way from minor to significant. So something that is good to see, that a government agency is looking to protect the employees as well as their families. So, because in the case of Slidell, the families were brought into the office too when it became pretty obvious that, you know, houses were not going to withstand the force of the onslaught of Katrina. A lot of the families came into the National Weather Service office, and those offices are not that large, so it makes it kind of tough to have all those extra people in there. But it's nice to know that they were looking out for their families as well as their employees. Nice to see that in Key West, because of course Key West is only just a few feet above sea level.
Well, a lot of lessons still being learned out of Katrina et al. A reminder for you that the opinions you hear expressed here on Weather Brains are those of the folks giving them, and not of ABC 3340. If you'd like to contact us, our email address is question@weatherbrains.com. Drop us an email. We'd love to hear from you. For James Spann, J.B. Elliott, Bill Murray, and Brian Peters, I'm David Black. Thank you for listening, and we'll see you next time for Weather Brains. Weather Brains is copyright 2006. All rights reserved. Adios.